Kim Anthony has a lot of painful and hard memories from her childhood, including a night when she remembers seeing her father try to take his own life.
I heard this commotion in the bathroom, which was next door, and I remember hearing my mother screaming, "No, no, don't, you can't." And he wasn't screaming, but I just heard wrestling, and I remember stepping into the doorway and seeing the both of them wrestling in the bathroom, and my father was trying to drink something. I don't know what it was, but I assumed it was poison. And I remember knowing without a doubt that he was trying to kill himself.
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. Today, Kim Anthony shares how she overcame unfavorable odds to become a six-time All-American gymnast. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You know, you've said for years, and I think it's been demonstrated not only in what we've talked about on Family Life Today, but just in life, family is powerful for good or for ill. Your family marks you
right
for life. But at the same time, family is not necessarily determinative. You can't point back and say, well, I can't or I'm not because of what happened in your family.
There are too many great stories of people who have come from, well, families that frankly almost put a sense of evil, a stamp of evil on their lives. They were abused or taken advantage of or came from such a rugged background. We're going to hear a great story today, and we've got a couple in the studio that I know both you and I are looking forward to chatting with them. Corin and Kim Anthony join us on Family Life Today. Kim, Corin, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
Thanks
great
for having us.
I almost introduced Kim as Kim Hamilton, which was how she was known as the first African-American gymnast to go to scholarship at UCLA. Is that right?
That's right. I was the first female to do that.
You know, I was looking at your record, and I've just got a real rugged question, Kim, right off the bat to ask you. This could be very embarrassing to you.
Uh-oh. But I'm scared.
It says here that you were a four-time national champion and a six-time All-American, and you were inducted into UCLA's Hall of Fame in October of 2000. I know that we all go to school for 4 years in college.
Okay.
Is there something you need to share with our listeners about flunking a couple of years so you became an All-American for six years?
Okay. No, I was at UCLA for 4 years. I finished and got my degree in 4 years. However, I competed on four events each year. So at Nationals, I had the opportunity to get four All-American titles because I competed all around: vault, bars, beam, and floor.
Oh, so I knew there would be a good answer.
So six-time All-American, how many of those were floor? How many of those were beam? I mean, what were you?
Oh, goodness.
You know?
I don't know, but this is really sad. But I did win the national floor title three times, 3 years in a row.
Wow.
And then I added a vault title to that as well.
Was that your favorite? The floor?
Floor? Yeah, it became my favorite because I love to perform.
And I know you tried out or were a part of the tryout process for the Olympics. What happened? Did you get to one of the games? Forgive me for not knowing this.
No, I did not make the Olympic team. I actually tried out for the Olympics at Olympic Trials in 1984. It was my first year as an elite gymnast, which is the level from which they pick the Olympic team. And it's very difficult to make it your first time out. But what happened at the meet was I, you know, had a couple falls, which didn't allow me to place in the top eight. But I ended up in the top 16 or 18. And the second team that did not go to the Olympics, they went to South Africa. So I competed in South Africa when they had apartheid, which was an amazing, it was life-changing for me.
Wow. Yeah. Well, great experience.
We didn't introduce your husband, Corin, here, and I know he's
used. He's used to this, aren't you? Aren't you used to?
Very much so.
He's over here smiling. Corin is a pretty significant athlete in his own right. In fact, both Bob and I are checking out his biceps and comparing our own. And
I'm comparing my thighs to his biceps.
Yeah, there you go.
And they're smaller.
He was an all-Pac-10.
I mean, my thighs are smaller.
His biceps, yeah, there you go. Yeah, there, right. Way to go. He was an all-Pac-10 tight end for UCLA in the late 80s. He graduated with a degree in economics. He went on to play in the NFL for the Los Angeles Rams and the New York Jets, worked with Promise Keepers for a number of years, and today gives leadership to the Pro Ministries of Athletes in Action, which is a ministry of Campus Crusade for Christ, which we are too. So he's a fellow staff member of Campus Crusade for Christ. And let's see, Corin, you have chaplains in about 12 NFL teams across the country. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And we have about five full-time chaplains with soccer, MLS, and a couple of chaplains that serve in the NBA as well as the MLB baseball.
And you yourself are chaplain for the mighty Miami Dolphins, right?
That's right.
Bob. You found a fresh way to insult whose biceps. Wow. He could crush you, Bob.
I was trying to get on the bandwagon, the mighty Miami Dolphins, right?
Sure you were.
This is going to be a great year for the Dolphins, isn't it?
Oh, yes, definitely.
There we go. See?
Well, and we got to say as well that Kim is the wives chaplain for the Dolphins as well. So you guys work as a team with pro athletes. We started the broadcast with Bob making a statement about how the families we come from can be incredibly powerful, but they're not necessarily determinative. In other words, if we come from a good family, that doesn't guarantee that we're going to necessarily follow the Savior and be good. On the other hand, if we come from a tough family, that too doesn't mean that our future is locked in either. And I want to take just a paragraph out of your book that you've written, Kim. It's entitled Unfavorable Odds. And I just want to read this to our listeners because I want to give them a picture of how you started life. You write, "I was destined for a rough life even before I was born. It was 1967. My mother was just a teenager when she became pregnant with me. We lived in a poor area of Richmond, Virginia. Three generations shared two bedrooms in a four-room house on South Lombardy Street. Up to 13 people lived there at any given time. The bathroom was an outhouse located in the remote end of the backyard. When the family needed water, they had to draw it from an outdoor spigot and carry it inside. They bathed once a week in a tub in the middle of the kitchen floor. To say it was rustic would be a considerable understatement." Your mom, she's a survivor.
She is.
I mean, she didn't start life with a stellar beginning, and she didn't bring you into life with the best of starts either.
She did not. However, she instilled in me that God had a plan for me.
Well, her pregnancy, you said she got pregnant in 1967?
Yes.
So this is 5 years before Roe versus Wade, but there were people having abortions in 1967. She's a teenager, single parent.
Yes.
Was that on her mind?
Well, actually, when she went home and shared with her mother that she had become pregnant, her mother, my grandmother, actually encouraged her to abort me, and they couldn't afford to go to a doctor. So basically, she told her what she needed to do in order to abort me, and my mother attempted because she thought that these words from her mother was the only thing to do. And she attempted several times, and nothing happened.
And your mom concluded from that?
She concluded that, you know, she wanted to keep the baby, and when my grandmother found out that none of it worked, then she said, you know what, maybe God didn't want it to work.
Hmm. Well, and as it turns out, if I remember right, your grandmother is a praying grandmother.
She was a praying woman. Yes, she was.
And a big part of your legacy, really, you attribute to her faithful prayers for you.
I watched her as I grew up. She didn't tell us a lot about the Lord, but I listened to her at night. I watched her pray. I watched her read her Bible sitting on the side of the bed every morning and every night. And to me, that said, you know what? Maybe there is a God out there.
Tell me about your dad. Did your mom and your dad ever marry at that point?
Yes. Actually, I think it was a few months after I was born, they decided to get married. And my father joined the army and went overseas. And so we went to Germany. And while my father was there, he experienced some very difficult times with racism in the army. And as a result of the devastation that he went through watching his friends be killed and things like that, he ended up getting involved in drugs to quell the pain, to help him to deal with the nightmares that he had been experiencing. So once we moved back to the States, he was, you know, continued the drug usage, and he was often out of work, unemployed.
What do you remember about him as a little girl? What, I mean, here you are in Germany with your dad in the military, and then you come home, and what are your earliest memories? How did you look at your dad?
Gosh, when you asked me that question, I immediately wanted to think of something happy. But I can't. What I remember as a youngster with my father is just him wanting me to be perfect, wanting my mother to be perfect, and us never really being able to please him. And he yelled a lot, and I was in the middle of it all, you know, even though I tried to block it out.
And
well,
Kim,
it was there.
Kim, that was over three decades ago. And I mean, you're very emotional right now talking about it. I mean, reliving those moments.
Mm-hmm.
A child does absorb
What's
taken place around them.
I saw it all. And I wish that I could forget. And I've tried to stuff down the emotions, the memories. But I knew after a while that God couldn't bring healing to my life until he brought those emotions to the surface and actually had me deal with them.
Was your father physically violent with your mom?
He had been physically violent, yes, and that's, you know, difficult for me to talk about. Mm. It wasn't often, but yes, it happened.
And did she ever think, I got to get out of here, I got to get safe?
You know, she did not leave because she wanted me to have a two-parent household. Mm. She wanted me to grow up with a father. And there were so many people in that environment in our neighborhood who didn't even know who their daddies were. And she wanted to have something better for me. And because of her desire, and as a Christian woman, she thought that the right thing to do was to stay with him. And she did.
There was word on the street, though, that he had other women.
Yes, that was definitely the case. And that was a reason why they got divorced when I was about 9 years old. I believe it was nine. I forget the age. But they did get divorced, and they got remarried after some time because he said that he had given up the other women and that he was ready to settle down and be a family man again. But after that newness wore off, it became the same old heartache again, and he got back into his involvement with other women and even had another family that I didn't find out about until I was about 28 or 29.
Wow.
You moved from Germany back to America, and you moved in with your grandmother.
Yes.
So here you've got drugs taking place with your daddy.
Yes.
Abuse, other women. Was your grandmother vocal about what was taking place in the midst of this? Do you have any recollection of that?
Well, my grandmother talked to my mother about it and my father, but I was never privy to any type of arguments between my grandmother and my parents in regards to how my father was acting. I know that my grandmother did not approve of his actions. There were never drugs in her house, but when we would be able to afford to live on our own, then that's when it was in the house. But she just loved on my mother and didn't approve of my father's actions. But she never said anything to me about it. My mother, to this day, has never said a negative word about my father.
Wow. Your dad actually came to a point where he despaired so much that he tried to take his own life?
Yes, he did. He had continued to be friends with the guys from the army that he knew in Germany and who had also experienced that racism and the difficult things and the drugs to try to dissolve the pain. And they were hurting, and they tried to find ways to cope with the pain. And I guess it got to a point where my father felt that he couldn't handle it anymore. And I remember sitting on my mother's bed, because we all slept in the same bed, and it was a one-bedroom apartment at that time. And I heard this commotion in the bathroom, which was next door, and I remember hearing my mother screaming, "No, no, don't, you can't." And he wasn't screaming, but he, you know, I just heard wrestling, and I remember stepping into the doorway and seeing the both of them wrestling in the bathroom, and my father was trying to drink something. I don't know what it was, but I assumed it was poison because she was trying to keep him from drinking it, and I remember knowing without a doubt that he was trying to kill himself. But the only emotion I felt at the time was sadness for my mother, because I knew the pain that she was going through constantly. And I thought, you know what, I hate to even say this out loud, even though I wrote it in the book, but my thought was, I hope that he does. So that way we don't have to be scared anymore when he comes home, and maybe things will be better for us.
That's what I wanted to ask you as a little girl. I mean, you were how old at the
time? I was eight at that time.
8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching a life that's spinning out of control.
Yes.
The abuse, the drugs, the attempted suicide. What does a little girl do to protect her heart? Because even at that age, a child will attempt to put the heart in a safe place,
because
you don't want to hurt anymore.
Right. And my safe place as a little girl, and it went into my adulthood, was a fantasy life. A fantasy life of a world where things were perfect, where my parents didn't argue, where, you know, I loved to pretend to be a TV show host, and I would sit my stuffed animals on the sofa beside me, and I would interview them like the Johnny Carson show, and I would go into this world of make-believe and just pretend it. And even in my adult years, I would do that anytime I felt some type of pain. And I realized that it wasn't a good thing, because I wasn't going to God to be my healer. I was going into my own heart, my own mind, to get that healing and comfort.
You wound up eventually going to UCLA on a gymnastics scholarship.
Yes.
Did you not see your dad for decades?
Well, I've always seen him at least every 4 or 5 years. When I was at UCLA, he would come to my gymnastics meets as far as nationals. He would come every year. And even when he was there, it was bittersweet, because we still had the abusive language or tone. You know, we still couldn't quite get it right for him. And so in between my competition days, I would spend time with my mother and my father, and I would be miserable and sad because, you know, of the things that he would say to my mother, and I felt unworthy. And I believe that he didn't mean to do those things, but that he was just dealing with so many issues in his own life that had gone unresolved, and he was taking it out on us, really.
When Bob mentioned that you went to UCLA on scholarship, I looked at your face, and you immediately just brightened. Was that an escape of sorts?
It really was. It was, I guess when I look back now on the fact that I was able to get out of Richmond, Virginia, and go all the way across the country to UCLA, it was definitely a means of escape. And it is where I found the Lord, you know. Not that he was hiding, but it was where I was introduced to a personal relationship with God. And so UCLA has very fond memories. I have very fond memories.
You and your husband, Corwin, eventually, you met at UCLA.
Yes.
You eventually were married. And Corwin, it was not long after the two of you were married that you said to your young wife, your father is having an impact on our marriage.
Yes. Yeah, we could see, I had just got done playing football. And, football got done with me, I should say.
We're speaking now of the NFL.
I'm sorry, yes, the NFL. And spent about 6 or 7 months trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And it was during that period that our marriage began to experience some new challenges, some new difficulties. And I began to recognize that Kim was starting to resent me a little bit, starting to not trust me as much, became more worried about me because I was out of work and didn't have direction. And I realized that she was placing me at the same place of her father, because her father was quite often out of work and didn't really have a lot of direction in life. And so that was one of the reasons I made that comment to her. And her response was...
Yeah, I thought, what do you mean my father, my relationship with my father is having an effect on our marriage? I don't even have a relationship with him. And Corwin just looked at me and said, yeah, you're right. And that was when I began to think seriously about the relationship. And I will say, it happened to be, I was listening to Family Life Today, believe it or not, when you all were talking about how to honor your parents, even if your parents have not done the honorable thing. And I took the challenge that you both put out, and I wrote a letter to my father, and I wrote down 10 things, positive things, that he had done in my life. And it, honestly, it took me a while to figure those 10 things out. But I came up with 10 things, and I mailed it to him, and I let him know that I loved him, and thank you for these things that you've done in my life. And I asked him, a little bit about what had happened in our past, and I said, I need you in my life, and I want you in my life. And from that letter, he wrote a letter back to me. And I remember not opening it immediately. I'd never gotten a letter from him before. But I saw his initials in the return address, and I just sat there and looked at it for probably a day before I opened it. And when I opened it up, he had written that he didn't quite understand why he did the things he did, but that he loved me. And I was blown away. And I still have that letter on my on my desk today.
One thing that didn't come out is Kim, even as a child, desperately longed for the love of her father. I mean, all children do. Mm-hmm. But Kim really sought that, and she found value from her father after he taught her a skill of rolling marijuana joints when she was 6 years old. Mm. And he would parade her at the parties, and she'd be the only little girl in the room rolling joints for all the adults. And Kim saw that as a means of gaining love and acceptance from her father. So she got real good at it, but she's always had that desire to love her father and have her father love her back.
Kim, that letter was written how long ago?
That letter was written like 92 or 93. So 18 years ago.
You still have that letter.
I still have it.
On top of your desk.
Yes. Yes. In perfect condition.
Because you thought maybe you'd never ever hear the words that are uttered in that letter.
Yes. It was the first time I had heard those words. And I just want to hold on to it for the rest of my life.
How many times have you read that letter?
Gosh, I don't know. Countless times. Countless times.
And we should say that wasn't the immediate fix for your relationship with your dad.
No, it
things
wasn't.
Didn't turn out perfect from then on. But you've seen God at work in the midst of the last 18 years in your relationship with him.
Yes, I have. And it was 2008 when I was finishing up the book that I was having a quiet time. And I really sensed that God was telling me that I needed to reconcile with my father. And I thought, you know what? I'm calling for him for Father's Day, Thanksgiving, birthday, Christmases, and he's not calling me back. And I've been doing this for several years. And I had just struggled with that previous Christmas. Do I call him again to be rejected yet again? And so when I felt the Lord was telling me this, I thought, Lord, I don't know how to do this. And so I said, if you want this reconciliation to happen, please, please do it for me because I don't know what else I can do. And so I've spent probably 6 or 7 months just praying and asking God to help me. And during that process, I went from wanting to talk to my father and have him own up and explain why he did everything he did to just wanting to talk to him and say, I love you and I need you. And God did a work in me in those several months. And I was able to get together with him at the end of the year during Thanksgiving weekend. And we talked in a restaurant, fast food restaurant. And I shared with him how some of the things that he had done when I was little and as I've been growing up had affected me as a child and has also had an effect in my adult years. And I also shared with him that now I get an opportunity to go around and I speak in prisons and at women's events and churches, and I share what God has done in my life to bring me from that little girl from Cary Street who had big dreams but no hope to a woman who now has purpose in life. And I said, Daddy, I don't share my story to embarrass you, but I share it because God has done a wonderful work. And when people hear it, they relate to it and they are touched and they're encouraged by it. And I asked him how he felt about me sharing the story, and especially in book form. And I was honestly ready to have him, you know, just read me up and down and be angry. And he just looked at me and he apologized for everything he had done. He said, I still don't know why I did those things, but I am so sorry. And he told me that he is happy that I'm sharing my story, our story, because it's helping people. And then he said, I love you and I'm proud of you. And I let him know that, you know what, Daddy, if I had it to do all over again, if God gave me the opportunity to choose who my father could be, I would choose you all over again because I am who I am because of you and because of God's grace.
That's an incredible statement. But I think it comes, Kim, as a result of God's work in your life, undoubtedly, that he's created a new person because of Jesus Christ that gave you the ability to forgive someone who many would say, man, that's close to being unforgivable. But also, I want to read the same verse I most likely read on those broadcasts you heard close to 20 years ago. It's what I have written in my Bible is the forgotten commandment. Mm. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. You know, Bob and I are looking into the eyes of a woman, and her husband is too. Corin is looking to your eyes, and we're seeing a person who is free of bitterness and anger and resentment toward a dad who, humanly speaking, failed. But to his credit, I was sitting there listening to you, and I thought, good for you. Good for you to hear your daddy repent and say, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Those words, what did they mean to you?
Oh, my goodness. I never thought that I would hear those words. And I'll tell you something, you know, through the years, because of the circumstances I grew up with, Christmas and Thanksgiving holidays have been very difficult for me. And anytime I hear a Christmas carol, I would get sad, whether it's in the grocery store or, you know, my husband loves to play it for the kids, I'd go to another room because I just couldn't handle it. Well, after this meeting with my father, I was driving down the road. I was driving down the highway in Virginia, and I caught myself singing Christmas carols. That's what it did to me. It freed me, just like you said. It lifted every weight that I had been carrying around for 41 years.
Whatever your parents have done wrong, however they've disappointed you, forgive them.
Yes.
I'm not trying to be trite, but why stay imprisoned?
Mm.
Be set free.
Yes.
Find a way to forgive them and do what Kim did, which is honor them.
Yes.
Powerful. Really, really powerful.
And, you know, she reflected back on those broadcasts from years ago. You wrote a book, which is called The Best Gift You Can Ever Give Your Parents, that talks about working through all that you had to work through, Kim. Working through the emotions and the challenges of the past to come to a place where you can honor your parents. You can go online at familylifetoday.com for more information about Dennis's book, The Best Gift You Can Ever Give Your Parents. There's also information there about Kim's book, which is called Unfavorable Odds. It's a great story, a powerful story of God's redeeming work in a young girl's life. And again, you can get information online at familylifetoday.com or call toll-free 1-800-FL-TODAY for more information about either of these books. 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. And I hope you can be back with us tomorrow. We're going to continue to hear more from Kim and Corwin Anthony. Back tomorrow, we're going to talk about how a young girl from the projects in Virginia winds up at UCLA as a gymnastics All-American. I hope you can be here for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.
Scenes from a Grocery Store, number 22.
Look!
What?
Kumquats!
You know what, babe? They're little oranges. Big deal.
The store's been out of these all year!
Well, hey, what are you doing?
I'm buying the kumquats!
They're not on the list. We can't do that.
Come on, are kumquats really gonna kill us?
Babe, I don't want to go over budget.
What budget? You've let the credit card receipts pile up for a month!
Okay, I've got this number in my head, and it doesn't include kumquats, okay?
Yeah, well, it includes your super roast premium Colombian shipped from Mongolia coffee, doesn't it?
Does it ever seem that every time money comes up, a fight breaks out? Find out how to resolve conflict at Family Life's Weekend to Remember Marriage Conference. You'll learn how to appreciate your differences and talk in a way that brings you closer together. You'll have time to focus on each other and let romance come alive. Find out more at familylifeweekend.com.
Fine. Let's put back the coffee and we'll get your tiny little oranges, okay?
Yummy!
That's familylifeweekend.com.